Now, today's Irish Independent reports that a supporter of Health Minister James Reilly owns the site in the minister's constituency where a controversial health centre will be built. The paper also claims that the minister used the premises as a base for his election campaign. This is just the latest twist in the ongoing controversy over the location of primary care centres, which contributed to the resignation of junior minister Roisin Shortall last week. Joining me on the line now is Health Minister James Reilly. Minister, good morning.
Good morning, Pat.
Now, what do you have to say about that story on the front of the Irish Independent today?
Well, I think we just stick with the facts if we can.
Please.
I know Seamus Murphy, of course I do. He's been a member of Fine Gael for 40 years. Anybody in Balbriggan would know him. He's been heavily involved in the community there, and especially in relation to supporting older people.
Can you throw light on his assertion, as reported in the Irish Independent, that he, when asked, did he know you? I've seen him on television. Now, he obviously knows you rather better than that.
Aye, of course, but I mean, the point is that many people I meet, say, God, the only time we see is on television, and they're people that I know. I wouldn't see them very often because of the business that I have to transact now as a business, as a minister for health. I mean,
do you think he was trying to do you a favour, kind of distance himself from you just to help you out?
Look, I only Seamus himself could answer that, but I can say this much. I mean, any contention that there's anything remotely inappropriate about this is utterly wrong. And I think even the author of it, Fia Kelly, this morning on the station, had to acknowledge that in response to a parliamentary question back in February 2010, when I was in opposition, this site had been identified. So, I mean, this the selection of this site has absolutely nothing to do with me. I believe and I understand that, in fact, the proceeds of any sale to Mr. Noonan, who is the man who is developing it, will go to NAMA. So, I mean, I don't see any benefit accruing there to Mr. Murphy, one way or the other. But having said all that, I mean, Mr. Noonan is not known to me at all. I'm very much determined that we have as many primary care centres around this country as we possibly can. I know for a fact that in 2004, this was a priority in the HSE. Well, as the HSE was being formed, it was part of the Fingal Development Plan 2002. All this I've read now in the Fingal Independent through a local councillor, an article involving a councillor, past councillor Joe Carr, who stood for the Green Party. I equally know that in 2007, 2008, it was identified and prioritised in 2008 by dint of the fact it was brought to the board of the HSE amongst a cluster of six or seven others and passed by the board as being an area that should be progressed and progressed quickly. And I think the statistics around Balbriggan are quite stark. I mean, in the last 10 years, the population has grown by a full 100%, from 10,000 odd to nearly 20,000. It's the second highest unemployment black spot in Dublin. And it's a town that needs very much, because of its population and the youth of its population, a proper primary care centre. It has no direct connection to either the Lourdes or to Beaumont, which are the two hospitals that serve
that
area.
OK, but just to get back to the whole thing, you're saying that this thing was confirmed as the ideal place for development of a primary care centre back in Mary Harney's time,
yes,
which is what your colleague in Cabinet, the Labour Minister for Education, Rory Quinn, has said to the House this morning.
Yeah, that's the truth of it. And I mean, we have the response from February 2010, lest there be any doubt.
Now, Fianna Fáil's Billy Kelleher has said that this is this story in The Independent is the first evidence of significant personal and political connection between James Reilly and the list of primary care centres. What do you say to Billy Kelleher?
I say Billy Kelleher is absolutely wrong. That I'd make a broader point too, Pat, if I may, which kind of takes us into other areas, but I'd have to say this. I said to the parliamentary party 2 weeks ago, before the confidence motion, that as we approach our goal of changing things, we're going to hear ever-increasing noise till it rises with a deafening din. And we're getting near to that point, because I will not tolerate the status quo from the patient's point of view. I want the patient at the centre of what we do. I want primary care centres around this country so that people can be treated as near to home as possible at the lowest level of complexity that's safe, timely and efficient. And I also want to see more primary care centres right throughout the country. And I mean, this is part of this plan. And I want to point out something which I think has been lost in all of this. We want to build them any way we can. So whether that be by way of lease agreement, like the one in Balbriggan, is currently going through, through the PPP, which is public-private partnership, and that fund over there, and through direct provision. And, you know, people think that this whole situation is locked down and in stone. It's not. It continues to change. So, for instance, if I just point to Balbriggan again, we know that this now is going ahead because I believe NAMA have accepted the bid, right?
Mm-hmm.
So this can now go ahead, subject to planning permission. So it will come out of the PPP bundle and something else will go in. And as other ones are done other ways, the bundle will change. And as some of the ones that we thought we might be able to do by direct provision, perhaps question marks might come over them and they might come out of that and other ones go into that
but,
area.
But you make the case for Balbriggan. You say it's been identified long since as a place that requires it and
correct.
The population increase, which is very dramatic, should almost insist upon it. Why then would Roisin Shorthall ignore this compelling case?
Well, only Roisin Shorthall can answer that question. I mean, look, we all have different views on things. I mean, that's the nature of life. I don't have any problem with people having a different view. There was a list drawn up. The list was modified again. It's been modified a number of times. I believe there's a contention in the Irish Times today that I changed the list in relation to some of the ones that were going to be their direct build and in the PPP. I didn't, actually. It was done by the HSE, and if you care to check with them, they'll verify that. So, I mean, I really reject any sense that I've interfered in any way or have in some way tried to gain benefit by this. This is actually my foray into politics, not just cost me personally, financially, but, you know, has cost me a lot in terms of a lot of reputational issues being put in place, which whilst I can stand them, and I've no problem, I signed up for this, I promised the people I'd do this job and I will do it. But it is kind of tough on family, you know, at times.
What people are concerned about is lack of transparency. You know, Roisin Shorthall had her list. There were 20 there that were going to go ahead. And then what I've been calling the blackmailing 15, there'll be 15 lined up. And if anyone in the 1 to 20...
I would prefer the term persuasion.
Okay, but you know what I mean, that if they don't accept the provisions laid down, if the GPs don't cooperate, well, then there's a queue of people lining up to accept the funding and the arrangements and go ahead. But it's how the 15 arrived on the list. And, you know, we'd like to see the criteria. If you want to apply for a job, if you have the appropriate qualification, the appropriate experience, you get the job. You know, often there are criteria laid down. In this case, you know, people are suggesting it's whimsical of the minister. The minister decides in his own heart, De Valera like, Balbriggan needs one, Swords needs one, maybe Balladrine needs one too, and whatever. And you look into your own heart rather than saying we have definitive objective criteria by which we can compile this list of 15 extra.
But actually, you've hit the core of the problem there. There is no definitive lockdown in stone criteria. There are broad criteria that used accommodation, that used implement. There was no implementability on it. Actually, it was accommodation. It was the local office's opinion, and it was a deprivation index, right? And I broadened that to include other things like the existence of existing facilities in the area and the access to them, the ratio of GPs to population, which is the lowest in the country in North Dublin, by the way, and various other things. Now, if you want to talk about the Boyle and Roscommon area, let's call a spade here. You know, we closed the emergency department down in Roscommon because we had to. I struggled in every way I could with HICWA. And I wasn't the only one at that meeting with HICWA when Tracy Cooper made it absolutely clear this could not be maintained safely. And I am a doctor and I have to listen to the experts when they tell me that something isn't safe. So it had to close. And I mean, obviously, if you've closed the emergency department, you've got to try and beef up primary care in the county of Roscommon to reassure people and give them confidence in their health
service. Okay, but you could be accused of not alone, you know, attempting to save lives by this process, but also save political skins. Local politicians who might have suffered on foot of what they consider to be a U-turn.
No, I mean, look, I think everybody wins here in Roscommon when we put a primary care centre in Boyle and in Balahadrine, and that includes, you know, the other politicians in the area. I mean, it's not just Frankie Fee and Dennis Nocton.
But it does provide them with a little political bonus, doesn't it, if they can deliver that? having failed, if you like, or having to U-turn on the promise to keep the hospital open?
Well, I think it benefits everybody. And I mean, sure, but the most important people to benefit are the patients, and to give them a sense that they have a service that they can depend upon. We've put in an air ambulance to give them reassurance around travel times to Galway and Portiuncula. And when I talk about Galway, this has been the most extraordinary turnaround. When Bill Maher went down there as head of that group, there were 9,901 people who'd be waiting longer than a year for a service, for an inpatient procedure. Do you know what that number is now, Pat?
No.
Zero. Now, that's a tribute to him, the team, the front line, and to the people who see the new leadership, know that we're serious, know that we'll deliver on the ground for them. And a lot of stuff has gone into Roscommon Hospital. It's got to the point okay. now where they're beginning to struggle with the amount of footfall in the place. So, you know, we're all about reorganising the service so that people will have the right service in the right place in a safe manner and not have a situation that pertained before where if you built a new A&E department, so you put a bright window in the front of the shop, you thought you had the full gear behind there to deliver the service you thought you were going to get. We didn't have it in many places, and we're trying to reorganise it in such a way as that everybody will have access to the service they need.
Going back to the politics of all of this, and you have been characterised in some quarters as the bull in the china shop. So to keep the bull metaphor, it seems you're a bit like the bull in the bull ring, and the picadors are putting their lances into your shoulders, and you're only awaiting the toreador to administer the final blow. Do you feel a bit like that at the moment?
No, I'll tell you what I do, though, if you want to continue the metaphor. I know who the toreador is, and the toreador are my electorate and the people who put Fine Gael into government. And they're the ones I'll answer to. And, Pat, in the middle of draining the swamp, you know, when you're surrounded by alligators, it can be hard to remember you went in to drain the swamp, but I have not forgotten that. And I said at the outset, there will be blood on the floor, and some of it will be mine. And some of it is mine, and there'll be more of it. But I'm determined. And can I say this to your listeners, and I want to say it to the people who work in the service, I'm more determined than ever, I'm more committed than ever. But I'm more convinced than ever that we're going to succeed because of the new leadership that's growing and the work that the frontline are doing. So we now have new leadership in the HSE. We now have new leadership in the VHI, which is critically important in terms of UHI and getting down the cost. Can I just give you 1 second on that? VHI hitherto four had very poor audit. It's improved, but they audit. In other words, does somebody coming in on the line there, Pat, I'm finding it hard to talk.
Yeah.
What I'm saying is they had some audit, but they never had clinical audit. And what I mean by that is they never went down to the doctor and said, why did you do that test? It wasn't necessary. Nor have they looked at the fees that we're paying consultants and why we still pay the sort of fees we paid before when procedures now take maybe 20 minutes when they took 2 hours before. Nor have we looked at why we're paying hospitals still on a per diem, per day basis instead of paying them per procedure. I've offered that to the VHI and the insurers in the public system. Charge us per procedure now, and if we're efficient, our hospitals will do well, and if we're inefficient, well, our hospitals will suffer. We have such an amount of lack of uniformity across the system. We've one hospital, Mullingar, excellent hospital, average length of stay 3.3 days. We have another hospital, 8 days. You know, we've one hospital, absenteeism amongst one section of staff is 10%, and another hospital is 3.3%.
We're hearing from the insurers that they get better value now from the private hospitals. What do you say to that? You know, they get a cheaper bed night, they get a cheaper price for procedures.
Well, we'll sit down and we'll talk to them all about that. And if they'll pay us the same price per procedure as they'll pay the public hospital or the private hospital, well and good. But you have to remember, in our public hospitals, we have the best of the best in terms of the Model 4 hospital with all your intensive care. Where do you want to be? Do you want to be in a private hospital when you've ruptured your spleen, fractured your pelvis, punctured your lung? I don't want to be there. I want to be in one of our big hospitals like Beaumont or James's.
And the cost, because of all the other stuff they're carrying, inevitably is going to be more overnight, is that it?
It is. But again, I want transparency. So I'm not going to continue with this apples and oranges, ash a day this and day that. I will quantify all that. And can I make another point in relation to the budget, which I think is something that concerns a lot of people?
Well, the Daily Mail today are talking about, because of the overrun of nearly a third of a billion euro, more cuts are going to have to be found in your budget next year. And that's going to make things even tougher in the HSE.
There's absolutely no doubt that we face a really tough challenge here. But I just want to reflect on what we've achieved to date, if I can, despite the fact that 1.75 billion went out in the last 2 years and we're taking 700 million out this year, and despite the fact that we lost 6,000 staff up to February of this year. We were told by the naysayers that, you know, pregnant women wouldn't be safe, and that's not true. Pat, I have to point out, there's somebody coming in with questions to you on my phone, and I can't.
Oh, yeah, no, that's right. My producer, Conor Kavanagh, is using the talkback, and it's actually coming through to you. Yeah. So we'll make sure that doesn't happen, because there's a couple of pressing matters that he is concerned about, which
Fine,
I'll come to in a moment.
And I'd be very happy to stay on, as long as you want me to stay on, to answer whatever questions you have to ask me. But I want to point out that the budget is, at the current run rate, going to be 250 to 290 million. Out of 13.3 billion, or roughly 2% over, and I don't think that's unusual. But having said all that, we're not accepting that. We're doing something about that. And I, you know, people are talking about the hospitals were let run riot. Let me be absolutely clear. The cash overspend projected relates 50% to hospitals and 50% to other services, right? And that's based on the most recent HSE reports. And I had the PCRS, what people would know this as, the primary care payments, you know, GMS payments board, the medical card section in. If they're not corrected in their spend by the end of this year is going to be 210 million. So we've had a good meeting with them. We've already taken a lot of money out, and we're going to get the rest of the money out over the next couple of months. And I don't accept, and the last people that will suffer in relation to this are the patients. And I want to make one final point, because I think it's really, really critical. Up till now, government after government and minister after minister have stuck their chest out there and talked about how much money they've put in, how many doctors they've employed, how many nurses, etc. They're all inputs, Pat. I'm focused now on outcomes, outcomes for patients. So I want more measurement of outcomes, and I can do that in the hospitals because we have average length of stay, we have the number of patients on waiting lists, we have the number of patients who go through our emergency departments. But we don't have that in primary care. So I think it's great you can see your family doctor within 24 hours, and I like to think that that improves outcomes, but I can't prove it.
All right.
So I'm developing measurements for that, but this is important, because if we get the measurements for that, we can encourage them to do the things that do help and perhaps pay less attention to the things that don't help patients.
Want to clarify a couple of things. The sword site, we've been talking about the Balbriggan site, which is the subject of the story in the Irish Independent this morning. What about the sword site? Do you have any connection, good, bad or indifferent, with the sword site?
No, I don't. I was kind of reluctant to say this, but the only site I had any control over, I made sure that this, I mean, I can't say I made sure, I couldn't allow it go ahead. Once I had a prospect of being elected as Minister for Health, I had to withdraw from that. And that site is not part of this, absolutely not, and anybody can check that. And yes, that has cost me financially, there's no question about that. But that's why it is mildly annoying to be accused of being involved in politics for self-gain. Anything couldn't be further from the truth.
So there's nothing in the sword site that you need to worry about that's going to come out in the Irish Independent tomorrow or the day after?
No, not a thing. It has nothing to do with the site being considered by the HSE. And I've double-checked on that. Again, I believe it's the same developer. And I'm not aware of which doctors are involved, because, of course, until such time as doctors sign up, you don't know who's going in and who's going out. But I wanted to say something else, if I may, and it's in relation to the budget. There's this concept out there, a preconcept, that, you know, hospitals are eating up all the money and they get the bulk of it. And I had an international operator in yesterday and he was saying the same thing. But here's the fact. The budget in 2009 was 13.4 billion, and 4.4 billion of that was for hospitals. 8.3 billion was not. It was for other things like primary care, community care, the elderly, disability, right? Now, from 2009 to 2012, the budget dropped by 10.5%, down from 13.4 to 12.04 billion, to be precise. The hospital budget dropped by 900 million euro, and the non-hospital budget dropped by roughly 900 million euro. But the percentage drop in the hospital budget is 21%. The percentage drop in non-hospital and primary care is only 11%. So you see how important
hospitals are taking a bigger hit is your point.
And absolutely. So I want to correct this image in people's minds that all the money's been spent in the hospitals. It's not. Now, that doesn't mean, Pat, and you'll allow me this one little attitude, that doesn't mean that we're not going to continue to pursue our goal and our programme for government in relation to getting more and more work out of the hospitals back into primary care. But what it does mean is I want proper measurements of outcome for patients in primary care so that we're getting the value for money.
You probably would not be in the kind of hot political water you're in at the moment. It wasn't for Roisin Shortall with her less than enthusiastic support of you, not even naming you in the no confidence motion, and then ultimately her resignation. Just to remind our listeners of some of what she said when talking to Marianne Finucane.
So that any exchequer funded centres will be, the locations will be decided on the basis of health need. We do it on the basis of deprivation, we do it on the basis of the existing facilities that are there, location, all of that kind of thing. There was a priority list drawn up by the HSE in conjunction with the department. So it was all done very transparently. And then when it came to selecting 20 sites, we took those sites on a priority basis. Then the list went from my office to the minister, okay? And, you know, a few days later, it ended up as a list of 35. James Riley added to that, put in an extra 15 himself. And, you know, I'm not arguing with that thinking that you increase the number, and there may be arguments for having, you know, a bigger number and more choice if some of them fall through. Mm. I wasn't arguing with that at all. But we had an established priority list. And but if he wanted to add more, he should have taken the next 15 on the list, but he didn't, and he went off and drew up a list. I don't know what was the basis on that
list. Did you discuss those criteria with him?
No. I heard about it the day it was being announced.
Did you think the conclusion of Balbriggan and Swords was stroke politics?
Yes, I did. Yeah, I have no doubt about that.
Now, we've dealt with the accusations of stroke politics, and you've put the case forward saying Mary Harney had them on Balbriggan on a list.
Can I go further?
Yeah, but first of all, the question is why you didn't go back to Roisin Shortall, given that that's her designation as junior minister, as Minister for Primary Care, and square away the list with her and argue with her and persuade her or maybe make concessions to her or whatever. Why you didn't do that before it went public?
Can I just say, I think it's important for the people of Balbriggan and for Swords that I restate what I said a couple of days ago. And that is that to say their needs can only be met through stroke politics is a desperate insult to them, when it's clearly demonstrated that the need was there, that the prioritisation had been there from 2008. Now, in relation to
it, also has to be said, these are areas with which you would personally be very familiar, and there would be other areas around the country who would probably make a claim to an entitlement for these centres, but with which you would not be so familiar and therefore not so open to their applications, I suppose.
Were they on a priority list in 2008? I mean, that's a question we can look into. Can I just keep making the point, though, that this is not locked in stone? It keeps moving and changing. And as we get success in building a centre over here by one methodology, that allows us to do it over there by another methodology. And can I come back to what Roisin said, actually? She said the exchequer funders ones were identified on needs of, you know, need deprivation and that. And that's still the case. They're the directly funded ones that we do, like the one in North Cork, a girl that brought her, like the one in Finglas South, where she's from herself, like the one in Blanchardstown. You know, then you have the PPPs. In fact, if you think about it, the PPP is a bit of a lottery because you're in there with a hope of you're going to be one of the 20 out of the 35. So you might be one of the 20 and you might not. And it's contingent, as we said already, on a whole host of issues around the ability to get the GPs
but
involved.
But do you believe it's impossible? It's impossible to draw up a set of criteria. I mean, Alex White, no doubt, will be asking you for such a list of criteria, so that any future decisions can be made on a weighted basis. We know the way competitions are run, and most famously or infamously, the second mobile telephone license, but a weight would be given to certain things: deprivation, medical need, population, the mix of population, demography, the number of children being born in that particular area. You could put loads of things in there, give them each a weighting, and therefore whatever decision came out would be transparent and hopefully, if you got the weighting right, absolutely fair.
Well, you see, this is the reality of life, Pat. you can have a very nice theoretical model on something and do all the things that you've just said, and then you can end up building a new primary care centre in the shadow of a big hospital and leave one, you know, leave another population area with nothing. So, I mean, you have to look at the reality of what's in front of you and the reality of what's on the ground. So, in other words, you could have that waiting system too, and you could find the GPs, no, sorry, we've already built our own centre here, we're not interested, or, I'm sorry, there's only five GPs in this town, and us two don't talk to those three, and we're never going to talk to them. This sort of stuff goes on. This is the reality that we have to deal with on the ground. But I want to say this...
It's your final word, by the way, because I put it to Pat Rabbit here the other morning, that you are the minister in charge. Now, she was never vested with the legislative... power, I believe, to bring these things in herself. It would always have to been at your say-so. Mm-hmm. But do you believe that at the end of the day, no matter what advice you get from the HSE, no matter what proposals you get from your junior ministers, that you ultimately make the decisions?
Ultimately, I have to make the decision, but I would always listen to the advice of the HSE and always listen to the advice of the department.
But you won't necessarily take it.
But I have listened to it, and I did take it in this instance, actually, in relation to a number of these centres. So I just want to make sure that people understand I didn't act alone by any means. Okay. I took advice.
But that question I did ask you a few minutes ago about why you didn't go back to Roche and Shortall and square it away and say, look, these are my proposals, Roisin. Do you have any issue with these? If so, let's talk it out. I mean, was your relationship with her so bad that you didn't talk about things like this, which are very important, the central part of her brief?
Well, look, Pat, I mean, there's a whole load of different ways of communicating. I mean, I would have been in communication with senior Labour ministers in deeper about this. And in the department, everybody speaks to each other. So, I mean, it would have been known to her that these things were happening. She mightn't have agreed with the criteria. I mean...
But you didn't go back to her when you added the 15 to her area of responsibility.
But I did write to her. I did write to her and explain to her. And that was on the Freedom of Information file. Now, that was a bit late getting out, and so be it. But, I mean... That was there, and I did write to her. Now, it's one thing to say...
Was it not after she'd found out the list that you wrote to her that was subsequent to the list being published and made available, and she was the one in charge? I mean...
Absolutely. No, Pat, you see, that's the whole point. At the end of the day, as you've just rightly pointed out, I am the one who's in charge.
No, but that was her area.
I have to make the final decision, and I can't make decisions in isolation to the remainder of the health service. And I've always made this point, no part of the health service exists on its own. In other words, if you don't fix primary care, you can't fix hospitals. Mm. If you don't fix community nursing units, you can't fix
hospitals. You can understand why, if, for example, a player on the rugby team finds out in the press that he's been dropped before the manager or the coach tells him so, that would be deemed to be grossly discourteous and unfair to that player, that they find out from reading it elsewhere rather than from the man himself. And that seems to be the case with Roisin Shortall, that part of the reason for her peak is that she wasn't across it. She was ambushed.
Well, I think at this point in time it might be more important. I mean, you played a certain amount of the tape there. There was other things on the tape that said I wasn't sticking to the programme for government. I am the main architect of the programme for government. Why in the name of God wouldn't I stick to it? Secondly, you know, we talked about the Americanization.
Let me play that particular clip because I have it. Yeah. I have it here. I'll play it.
I had serious differences with James Riley. And I had serious concerns about his ability to manage the health service. And, you know, his ability to implement the reforms or his interest in implementing the reforms. I believed he was going in an entirely different direction down the whole kind of privatisation American style route. And I still firmly believe that.
That's what she said, the American privatisation route.
Exactly. And nothing could be further from the truth. I refer you to page 34 of the programme for government, where it says citizens will have an option of competing insurers. And that's what I'm doing. And in relation, everybody's entitled to their opinion. I mean, you know, if you were to ask Billy Keller, sure, he'd say, I couldn't manage anything. But I mean, the reality here is, not alone are we managing it, we've improved it. And I do think, you know, in the short time, whatever we have left, I'd like to point this out, that despite 1.75 billion going out of the budget, despite 6,000 people gone since last February, despite the shroud waving by opposition politicians that women wouldn't be able to have a safe delivery and that cancer patients wouldn't get the treatment they needed, not alone did they get a safe service, we improved it. And I improved it this way, if I can just say, because these are facts, Pat, and you can check them. We have reduced the number of people lying on trolleys around this country in our hospitals by 22%. That's over 13,000 real Irish citizens who don't have to endure that terror that was the case before. There's still too many waiting and there's still much work to be done. But we've made some progress. We have reduced the number of people who wait now for a year or longer for an inpatient procedure by 85%. 85%.
So progress is being made.
Yes. We've reduced the number of people waiting 9 months or longer for an inpatient treatment by 63%. And we've reduced the number of people who wait for longer than 3 months by 18%. So by any parameter, any measurement, we are improving.
All right, now let me stay with this for one second, please.
You've
said that again and again, how well you have done.
No. I've said that we've improved things, not how well I've done, how we've improved things, how the frontline men and women working in our health service have taken ownership again and are delivering for their people.
Yeah. Have you, looking back on all of this, done anything wrong?
That's your
along
pattern.
The way.
I've said it. I'm on the record of saying, and it's a saying I
but
remember.
But there's nothing improper in anything you've done vis-a-vis,
you've clarified the swords.
or Balbriggan or any of the other centres around the country. You are emphatic that you've done absolutely nothing wrong there.
Absolutely not. And I've said it before, and I said it on this station last Friday week. If I had it to do again, I'd do it all again.
And finally,
is not to say, Pat, and I'll be the first to put my hand up, it is not to say I haven't made mistakes. Because as I said before, the person who makes no mistakes makes nothing. And can I say in relation to that, I've tried to encourage that through the system for the first time ever a couple of weeks ago.
I
say this, we had 55 managers, the top people from the HSE and the Department of Health, the first time it's happened, and I said to them, what I'm going to say to you, I said, don't be afraid to innovate, don't be afraid to tell us what you think might be possible, and don't think we won't listen because politicians don't like that sort of thing. We listen to everything. Right. And if you make a mistake, we'll support you. And if the innovation is successful, we'll laud you.
Okay,
and rising out of that meeting, there was 11 issues on the table where we might make improvements. At the end of the meeting, that number was 55.
Okay, I have to ask you, though, in conclusion, the nature of the way you did business with Roche and Shortall. I mean, are you going to change the way you do business with Alex White, for instance? I mean, you have been characterised, rightly or wrongly, as having a bullying manner, shall we say.
No, I utterly reject that. There's no way that I have a bullying manner, and I reject that issue completely. And everybody is focused on... Can I put it this way to you without being pejorative to anybody? I have an excellent working relationship with Kathleen Lynch. We have our moments, as we all do. The natural tensions come to the top, come to the boil occasionally. We resolve them. That's the sort of relationship I will have with Alex White, I have no doubt.
So it was Roisin's fault rather than yours?
Look, I'm not in the blame game. I don't believe that brings us forward anywhere at all. What will bring us forward now is the consultants coming back to us and saying, yes, we accept the LRC. It's nurses coming forward now and talking about new ways of working. It's other people in management talking about new ways of doing business. And let's all work together to give the people of this country what they deserve and what they've paid for. And that's a health service that's fair to everybody and that you can get into when you need it. And you don't have to worry, did I bring me checkbook? Do I have money in my back pocket? I'll be seen.
All right. Minister James Reilly, thank you very much for joining us on the programme this morning.